Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and this is typically the spot where I come up with some goofy intro for my usual partner in podcasting crime, Dan. However, old Dan the Waffle Man's been feeling a bit under the weather this week, and he also has to prepare for a rather major trip next week. So while he has graciously agreed to still handle the post-production chores of adding the music that you hopefully just heard, as well as several tunes throughout this podcast, this will be a Dan-less podcast. Now, although living the single life means I do tend to talk to myself way, way, way too much, there is no reason to do that here, for the rest of our little all-star squad is waiting in the wings, so let's get right to our roll call of introductions here for our lady and gentleman.
Hi, it's Vicky.
Hi, it's Cade.
Hi, it's Jason, and fuck Dan. Welcome to show 110.
He'll be so happy.
Of course, you know, to say that.
Of course, you know he'll never. Unlike me, he'll never listen to it. Well, other than the unique aspect of starting right off without Dan here, and that's going to happen a couple times this month, but I'll talk about that towards the end of the podcast again. Another rarity about our little Geekcast here is that we're really not going to be discussing The Flash or Arrow. Although I do suppose we'll get a little bit of Oliver Queen in our first segment this evening. So with that said, let's get started tonight with Legends of Tomorrow. Now, we often, well, not we, me, often like to start off with whatever the official synopsis was for the episode, because we're actually going to be covering two episodes this week. Last week's episode, and, you know, since there's no Arrow or Flash, we're going to tackle the one that aired just a few hours ago. But let's go back to last week, and that episode was Star City 2046. And that little description went something like this. The team encounters a very different Oliver Queen. When a malfunction sends the Wave Rider crashing into 2046 Star City, our heroes face a startling version of their own future, where they never stop savage and never return home. The city is in ruins and overrun by criminals, which thrills Rory. Oh, my affectation went up when it shouldn't have. Anyway, Sarah is despondent over the destruction of her home and stunned when she learns what happened to her old friend, Oliver Queen. Now, this is one of those episodes we had heard about to a certain extent well in advance. Basically, we knew that Stephen Amell was going to be showing up on Legends of Tomorrow as an older version of Oliver Queen. And those of us who are a bit more comic book geeky, as I say, were especially intrigued because it sounded like they were going to do a version of Oliver Queen that was somewhat like his appearance in the classic The Dark Knight Returns, which was the aging eye-patched, one-armed, cantankerous Oliver Queen. Although he was always cantankerous in the comics, so no matter how old he was. I don't know if we exactly got that here, but that's fine. They were not claiming that they were going to actually do The Dark Knight Returns. You know, it's not like this is a Batman show. That would be Arrow, I guess. But there were some other interesting developments as far as who appeared in this episode. Namely, the fact that we had another Archer who we learned was actually Connor Hawke. Now, I know that character is somewhat near and dear to Cade's heart. So, Cade, why don't you take it from here, and you can talk about Connor Hawke. If you want to talk about comic book stuff, feel free. That is going to be the nature of our podcast from time to time. But also how you felt about his appearance here and everything else about it. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm not going to do this straight. Hey, here's the comic book thing, here's the show thing. Because really, it's going to be good to actually blend the two so I can kind of counterpoint them. So we knew going into it that he wasn't going to be Oliver's son like he is in the comic books. So we had the question of who would be his parentage, would it even be discussed, and we did get that answer in that he is the son of John Diggle. We can assume Lila's the mother, but we don't really know. I mean, I can't imagine that the case. So it was interesting that they did try to keep him tied to the Arrow mythos by having him be the son of someone who is close to Arrow. And for me, that was an okay change, since we knew it wasn't going to be Oliver. Having it be Diggle works for me. It can explain the ability he has, that his father is a man who was trained in military, so him being able to fight and protect himself and do this worked perfectly here. As far as the character, I really enjoyed the Connor Hawk that we got on TV. He's not exactly the Connor from the comic, because he couldn't be, because it's not the same story, how he was brought in. But to see this one here, who is someone who, in a situation where you can pretty much say you couldn't fault anyone for not wanting to be the hero, he's the hero. He came into a situation where he is in a city overrun, but he is doing it similar to what Oliver did when he first came back to Star City. He was the lone guy trying to fight all of these bad guys. And for that, it was good, because it built him. Immediately you see this guy is trying to make the city better in a situation where he alone probably can't, but he is doing as much as he possibly can. And he looked really good. It almost looked like it was a version of, like, the Arrow. I mean, the Speedy Arsenal suit. But even at that, it was green, and he looked fantastic. I mean, he interacted well with the other people. And it was something I hope, like, when we have Vixen on Arrow, I hope at some point we may get more of Connor on the show. Because this Connor Hawk I really like. Now, the one thing I would like to know is how he picked the name Connor Hawk. I want to know where that came from. Because I know why they did it. They had to have him be Connor Hawk. But it is one of those things. I'm like, the whole show's like, well, why are you Connor Hawk? I know you don't want to be John Diggle Jr., but why Connor Hawk? Why that name? How did you pick that name specifically? So hopefully at some point we do understand where that comes from. Maybe we can get something to understand where that name came from, why it means something to him so much that he's so embraced it. But as a whole, I enjoyed seeing him on the show, and even at the end where he comes together and him and Oliver become kind of like a team, like the old Batman and then the Batman Beyond character is going to help fight the city together.
Right. Well, there has been a little bit of talk, which is kind of interesting. I might as well just mention it now instead of later, because there was a very positive reaction to the Connor Hawk character on the show. So there are discussions as a possibility out there. No one can know for sure, because it would probably just be too big a spoiler, I guess, that they may decide to tinker with the format of the show. Not so much this season, but maybe for a second season, assuming there is a second season, where they would cycle characters in and out of the show, where the lineup of the team that we see now might not be the lineup of the team that we see completely next year. Some characters may come and go. And the possibility is that might be how we might get to see Connor Hawk be part of the show for a stretch of time, because he could join their mission just as well as anyone else could. That's what I was reading in a couple articles about earlier today. So since you mentioned wishing you might get a chance to see him again, and it could only be on this show, it couldn't really be on Arrow.
No.
It could be on The Flash, but it couldn't be on Arrow. But just thought I would mention that.
I have to say that about your rotating cast idea, I love the idea. And spoiler alert, since I'm going to talk about the second episode as well, you know, we've already seen two cast members go from the original lineup. So it's not that big of a stretch to think that they're going to bring new people in. And you know what? Frankly, I think they need it. They need to get rid of at least one more character. Because it's so goddamn irritating to me. Even it was these two episodes, it just got worse. Talk about the Hawk Girl character, of course, but...
No.
But yeah.
I thought he was going to talk about Ray.
No, but Ray, he was getting a little thin tonight too, but... that's what I had to say.
Well, going back to Star City 2046, because that's kind of where it started, and probably the weakest aspect of that entire episode was the rather ridiculous, in my view, or why are you forcing this into the show at this point? The, for lack of a better way to put it, the love triangle situation that they I mean, okay,
so forced, the, so forced.
It was bad.
I mean, am I right? Like, it's not like there was like little hints or anything or a build up to this. It's like out of nowhere. Hey, you know what? We're gonna have this guy like. No, actually, we're gonna have both these guys like. Wait. Meanwhile, she's so annoying. Why like her? Although I'll be honest, I didn't mind her that much in tonight's episode, compared to last week. I don't know why. Maybe I just got a better look at her. I don't know what it is, but she didn't annoy me as much this week. Although that aspect of the storyline did annoy me, but I couldn't stand it. It was just juvenile crap, as far as I was concerned.
The only good thing that I think came out of it was the whole Stein and Jax reacting the way they can't hide from each other, and that they'll act, the other one will act the way the one is feeling. I thought that was a nice little. I mean, sure, they could have given us a better story than what they did, but yeah. It was nice that we got to see some more of how their bond actually works.
Yeah, I like how their bond works, but having Professor Stein essentially participate in this sitcom-level, puerile silliness. I mean, I know this show is not as serious a show as others that we watch, or anyone watches, and it's supposed to be fun. I get that. I want it to be fun. I don't want it to be stupid. And, you know, the CW is kind of, and the Berlanti shows do have that tendency to start getting into this, you know, shippy stuff. And, you know, sometimes they do it reasonably well, or they do it well enough so it doesn't really bother me. But here, it's, as Jason was saying, it's really forced. And not to mention, it's a little contrived. To me, it just comes off like, hey, look, there's an available girl here, so let's have these guys have the hots for her.
It came off more like that, you know what, no one's interested in each other, let's throw these people together.
So,
go on. I agree, I found it really annoying. I'm like, what? Why is the need for this? What? They had to fill the quote-unquote relationship gap now that Hawkman is gone, so they just threw in Jackson, Ray. And I think Ray, it was Ray that said this, who summarized this best, what is this, high school?
Right. Although, you know, I'd like to give them credit for making like a little meta-like comment like that, but it doesn't forgive the fact that we had to sit through so much of that.
Oh, yeah, you know?
It's just, I
But that encapsulated my feelings about it. Yeah, it's just completely unnecessary. They're grown adults. Grown adults can have relationships with the opposite gender without it having to be romantic.
Well, there's truly no reason for it. There's absolutely no reason for it. I mean, and it feels to me like, okay, we can't do it with, you know, Sarah because of her issues, at least not at this point in time. Plus, you never know, we might want to bring her back to Arrow at some point because she's one of the characters who can really still work well on that show if they ever want to bring her back. So, oh, we'll do it with her. I was like, hey, guys, what about a show like, I don't know, Star Trek? You can have all these characters, male and female, and not necessarily have to have this kind of thing going on. And if you do have it going on, you can have it be done in an organic way, where it's believable, where it's not high school, where it's not just cheesy, it's not stupid. My eyes rolled right the hell out of my head when I realized that that's what they were doing, because I didn't know that they were going to go this route on the show. So that was a big disappointment. I mean, And the fact that it's taking the place of the Hawkman situation, well, that situation, as we spoke about before, wasn't so great to begin with, you know? So they went from creepy to stupid, so I don't know. But, you know, I mentioned her, so I kind of wanted to switch over to Sarah, actually, because in a way, she kind of played a major part in this episode, because, you know, Star City was her home. And she had the closest relationship with Oliver of this crew. So I was curious to see what folks thought about her and how she acted and interacted. And And let's get into Oliver as well. I mean, we spent all that time on Connor. Let's talk about what the big selling point for this episode was, which was seeing Stephen Amell with a big old beard. So, Vicky, I feel I should defer to you now, because we're talking about Ollie and Sarah, and especially since Dan's not here to give you crap about Felicity. And the smoke industry is building. So what? How do you think they handled all that? And what did you like or dislike about it?
I really liked it. I liked seeing, you know, old man Oliver, even though he's, you know, he lost his arm or whatever. He still has that bionic arm. That's pretty awesome. And he can still really kick butt. So it was good to see him have some action as well. I don't know, though. My biggest gripe was Sarah's insistence that she had to go back and, you know, get back Connor. Her insistence that she had to help save the city. Like, I get it, she has these emotional attachments to Star City because that's where she's from. She has the emotional attachment to Oliver because, you know, she has that relationship with him. But as Rip was saying, this was only a possible future. And basically, if they accomplished their goal, this future was never going to actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's truth there, but think of it like Barry insisting on doing things on Earth too when it really had nothing to do with him. It's like, you know, but if you're, you know, if you're a hero, as we often like to point out, and, you know, you are, you know, tend to care about people and friends and emotions, that's what you're going to do. It's really hard to make that decision to know that, well, this will eventually be resolved, because your first thought is to end or help someone suffering, you know, and come to the rescue. So it's tough. It's tough to have that. It's tough to have the Star Trek moment of letting Edith Keeler die, so to speak.
But yeah, no, I think the best comparison for this was, Barry's insistence in getting involved in everything on Earth too.
And now we're able to work the Flash into our conversation. So,
yes, there we go.
So our opening and closing music is fine this week. Excellent.
Good job.
I know there's one other major aspect of the episode that I want to save for last. I'm kind of at a loss. What was Rip doing here? Oh, wait. This was. I remember it now. This
is what they got attacked by Kronos.
He was like fixing the ship, or as Gideon said, Kendra did most of the actual work.
Right, and then they had to go. Which man? They'll get. Yeah, the barista knows how to fix a spaceship. Okay,
because apparently she was a welder in 1944 or something.
Oh, of course. And when I see footage of Rosie the Riveter,
she has reincarnation power.
Yeah, when I see footage of Rosie the Riveter, my first thought is, oh, I'm sure they can work on the turbo drive of a 30th century spacecraft or something. like Jax is somehow.
As Jax was saying, an engine's an engine.
Yeah, no.
Not really.
I know. That was a bit of a stretch.
You know, at least with him, if he had some of that transmutation power that Firestorm has in the comics, I could have gone, okay, he's transmuting things, making it work. No, that's not the case.
Yeah, and I wouldn't ask the local mechanic who helped tune up my friend's car, hey, I'm having a problem with the 747. Could you check out the engine for me?
This engine's the same, right? It's just bigger, huh?
Oh, speaking of Jax, you know, And it's about this the new episode as well, and every other episode. I kind of feel one of the issues of the show has been that they feel the need to, you know, obviously use Victor Garber as much as they can because he's one of the more characters and actors on the show. Let's just face it. But they seem to not have them joined as Firestorm as much as one would think they would, and I always feel like there's a lot of instances where. why don't they just become Firestorm here? I'm not really sure why.
Like on the ship?
Yeah, which, you know, I guess we should really say that we're almost there, but I've noticed it before tonight's episode. I keep thinking, there are a lot of other instances where these two could just, fuse together and take care of business. I feel they kind of ignore that sometimes on the show. It kind of bothers me a little bit.
It's like they gave themselves a super, super powered character and then went, oh, shit, we can't have lots of situations because they're super powered. Oh, we just won't put them together. We just won't have them be super powered.
Right. At no point should they be on separate teams, because I feel like the situations from the past two episodes could have been solved if they were just on the same team.
Yeah, it makes no sense to have them separate, because they could always, if there's an emergency, you'd want them to be able to fuse together. And quite frankly, the Firestorm that we're seeing on, that we saw on both The Flash and on this show, those of us who've read comics, whatever, know this Firestorm doesn't have half of the abilities or amazing abilities that the comic book character does. So he's actually a lot more powerful and amazing than what that we're seeing here. You know, hence when someone online several weeks ago made that Human Torch crack, and I kind of got annoyed about it. Now looking back after, we're seven episodes in, it's like, yeah, I get the point. because you're not giving him anything to do other than these nuclear, which looks like just fireball blasts, but whatever. It's a little nitpicky as far as his abilities on the show. I don't think it's nitpicky to say, as you guys were saying, they should always be at least on the same team. Jason, perfect point. It doesn't make any sense, because you want them to be in a situation where they can save the day. So, maybe the writers think it's too easy and out for them. It's like, well, then why would Rip Hunter have put them on the team then? What was the point of that? Now, speaking of people that some might have wondered why Rip Hunter put them on the team, one of the major parts of the Star City 2046 episode was what was going on with Rory and Snart. Now, apparently, as criminals are overrunning the city, as I guess they said in the description, and in a way that was almost as close as they would get to another nod to The Dark Knight Returns, only instead of, mutants running all around, running rampant, doing stuff, they're just your common cheap, punky-looking criminals, out of some bad, schlocky sci-fi movie or something. Anyway, the whole point being that Rory really likes it there. He gets put in charge pretty quickly when he clocks the guy who was in charge or something. Meanwhile, Snart is trying to break him out of this and get back to the mission, back to the team. And what's really important about all this is we see these cracks form in the relationship between these two, which we hadn't, I don't know if we had quite seen that before. Maybe we had, actually. Maybe there had been a line or two. Yeah, but it really...
It was in the Russia episode.
Oh, right. Right. The Russia, of course. Absolutely. But I think it became a bigger thing in this episode, certainly. Certainly culminating with Snart decking him, knocking him out so that he could take him back, I guess. Kind of like doing the Professor Stein thing. In a weird way. Only without a roofie, Fist instead. So, what did you guys think in that episode of the whole Rory Snart thing? And in a weird way, I thought that ended up being, outside of seeing Oliver Queen, it ended up being kind of the centerpiece of the episode, because it's probably the most genuine relationship of two characters on the team, right? At least at that point. Jason, since you started speaking already, I'm gonna make you talk more now, Mr. Sick. So go ahead.
Well, I feel like that this is actually an arc that they've tried to run from the Russia episodes up until now, and telling the story of these two eventually having a difference, it getting bigger, and then suddenly it's blown all apart by in tonight's episode. And it's actually one of the better things that they've done in the past three or four episodes. It's one of those things that you buy. It's like, yeah, I can see this. Wentworth Miller tells him, like, why am I sticking around with Rory? Well, this is why. saved me as a kid, and this is why it's not working out anymore. You could tell that it was just not working out anymore for Mick. It was time for him to go. He was throwing the fit when they were stranded for a week, you know, not doing anything. He couldn't set anything on fire. He was a volatile person, and his time was up.
Right. Well, since we're going to talk about Maroon now, let me interject with just the basic description of that episode, and then we can resume talking about Rory and Snart, because obviously that was the big thing in tonight's episode. This episode is called Maroon, then it was Pirate Attack. After receiving a distress call from another time ship stranded in space, Rip decides to answer the call in order to use the other ship's computer to track Savage. The team is suspicious and warns him that this could be a trap, but he moves forward with his plan. Isn't he always going forward with plans where he knows it's a trap? Anyway, ultimately, the team was right, and they have to battle time pirates. With most of the team captured, it's up to Professor Stein to rescue them all. By the way, the entire episode, I kept wanting someone to say time bandits instead of time pirates. I was really disappointed that they didn't do that.
We didn't have Cisco to make the joke. That was the problem.
That's true. So let's go back to talking about Rory and Snart here, because what came to blows, or at least one blow in the previous episode, really boiled over here. And as Jason was saying, you know, even being a week on that ship was driving Rory crazy. And, you know, the idea that they brought a guy who could start fire and he's in a situation where he can never light anything on fire. And I thought a really telling moment was when Rip lost it with him during the episode and made it clear that the only reason he grabbed him as well is because he wanted Cold, but he knew that he had to take Heatwave with him because they were a package deal. That was interesting. I hadn't expected that moment to happen. That was kind of interesting. And I think that pretty much sealed the deal as far as Rory wanting out, because even if he acts like he's somewhat simple or has the IQ of meat, I think in a weird way that impacted him. I think it hurt. Even one could say it even might have hurt him a little bit, because he realized that he wasn't necessary. He wasn't needed. He's only there because they wanted this other guy. So let's talk about this some more. And also, let me just say, I really thought the performances, especially, I always screw up everyone. Is it Dominic Miller? Is that his name? Or no,
Dominic Purcell.
Purcell and Wentworth Miller. Yeah. I cross-hatched their names there. This is probably some of the best stuff I've seen Purcell do on the series. And The Flash as well, because other than this, he's pretty much been either a one-note character or with the occasional funny line. I thought they gave him a bit more depth finally. So let's see, who can we go to now? Cade, would you like to speak about this first?
Yeah, I'll talk about this, because talking about the two episodes, though, one of the things is we're seeing Cold having growth in who he is, being around everybody. Not to say that he's becoming a good guy, but he's definitely changing into buying into the team. He sees these people as more than just useful items. Like when he talks Sarah down from killing Stein, that was a personal connection. He's making connections with the others like he had with Rory. And this is where you really see it come to a head, when it's like, Rory's turned him all over to the pirates, and Snart makes the decision. He's like, no, I do like these people. I'm not saying it openly, but there's part of me who likes them, and I'm going to fight with them, even though you're the one who protected me. I don't feel I need the protection from you anymore. I don't need you to protect me anymore. I have these other people who probably would protect me if it came down to it. So, and that was where it came. It's like a man who was growing versus the guy who didn't change. Mick was still being Mick. He couldn't be Mick like he wanted to be Mick, and it came to a head, and when it did, he did what he had to. You saw him drop from being Cold. That was like one of the first times, one of those few times you actually see him have emotion. The other times were like with his sister or with his father. You saw him be more than just that cold, steely face you get from Cold. There was honest emotion in that final scene where what happens between him and Mick. And it was like, this is someone who's going to, he's going to bear that for a while. And how it affects him later on, we don't know. But it definitely was the point where he realized that these, they were not going to be the friends they had or the partners they had been for a while, because he was something different than how they had been in the past.
Vicky?
Yeah, I agree with a lot with what was said. I think, like, we've seen character development with pretty much everyone else, but Mick has basically been just about the only one who has stayed, who, you know, pretty true to who he was from when we knew him before. He's, you know, that same bullheaded, you know, I just want to see the world burn. Whereas, as you said, Snart has not necessarily become more of a good guy, but he's, you know, he's seeing that he can, you know, quote unquote, work well with others, be a team player and whatnot. I found this to be the most interesting storyline over the two episodes, because we got more of that development of their relationship. Whereas, you know, before in The Flash, it was very just, okay, yeah, we're buddies, we're partners, we're gonna, you know, rob people and take stuff. Right. And I found it interesting to hear the story of how Snart and Mick first met in, you know, Snart's first day and Juvie. And I feared, though, that now we were finally getting, you know, origin story, quote, you know, backstory that, oh, gee, now, okay, so one of them are going to die.
That was interesting about the ending there, that it certainly looks and appears like he just killed him. I mean, do we agree that that's what they wanted us to think?
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
As much as I don't want it to be that, yeah, I think that's what it was.
Now,
I think it's going to be he shoots off to the side.
Oh, boy. Although, by the way, since they were where I can't remember where they were, they didn't really tell us when and where they were, when what planet. I mean, I guess it was Earth. But that, I don't know why that bothered me, but I kind of was like, hey, but where are they?
Yeah, no, we didn't get a specific, like, time or place.
Are they still in 2046? Because, you know, they didn't have a place to go until, you know, until the end of this episode. Anyway, it's I know that's not really important, but it kind of bothered me a little bit. Because, you know, it took him down to some planet to kill him. Like, why couldn't they just go kill him in the hatch or something? But, yeah, and what the reasoning was that they were afraid if they left him, put him back in 2016, he would come after their loved ones. Why would he do that?
Just because he's so angry at Mick for, or he's so angry at Snart for, you know, quote unquote, betraying him.
I thought what they were going to do initially, I thought they were going to drop him back with all the criminals in 2046.
Yeah.
Give, you know, grant his wish after all. But because, you know, that's being the hypothetical, that future may or may not happen. But maybe the whole timeline thing, I don't know. But I was surprised by that because, you know, kind of a major character. I mean, definitely one of the team. And I certainly thought we'd see them again, if not on this show, then on The Flash in the future. And hey, he's a rogue. They just killed a rogue. So not a top tier Flash rogue, but still a rogue. So I didn't see that coming, and until we got to the end, then I did. So that kind of made me go, oh geez. And it was really weird watching it on the CW tonight, because it ends with him, you know, Captain Cold, you know, firing the freeze ray essentially at the camera, thus it being Rory, and then they cut right to an ad for an upcoming show on the CW. And then it cuts back to the way the show's always ended with the little TV screen and the ad for next week. It really kind of threw me there. It's like, wait, what? Did you just put a commercial in between for your new show? Well, I'm staring at the screen like, what just happened? I thought that was very strange. About the episode overall, it was an interesting episode because the first part of it, I'll have to admit, I wasn't digging it about a quarter or a third of the way into it. And somehow the episode turned around for me, and then I ended up liking it for the rest of it. And a lot of that might have been due to the conflict with Rory and Rip, and then eventually Rory and Snart. Or maybe it was the interactions between Snart and Sarah
Yeah, that was
when they're
actually really
freezing.
good.
Although I thought it was interesting that she still, even as they're freezing together, she does say that she still doesn't like him.
Yeah, but what I saw was interesting is that when it got super cold in there, you see that he gave his jacket to her.
Yep, I saw that.
Yeah.
It was a small thing that if you notice, you realize he did think above himself and gave her the jacket, realizing she didn't have the, she's not, it's not something, she should have the jacket. It was a nice thing. It was a small thing, though. It was one of those moments where you realize there's something changing in him. He is changing because he did that.
Yeah, I would
Yeah, I
agree with that.
noticed that as well. I thought that was just kind of like a good, like, small thing to add.
I think a lot of this episode, when you see those two and you see other little things, you start realizing where the show really works and where the show kind of doesn't as much. And I don't know if it's about there being too many characters or maybe they're just not doing as good a job as developing or really working the characters into the stories in a way that makes them seem useful. Because that's, I think for me, that's kind of an issue with the show overall, is you put together this super team, right? To whatever, and you don't seem to use them for any reason, to showcase their abilities half the time. I get, yeah, every time they got to steal something, they used, Snart and Rory, and now I guess it'll just be Snart or whatever. But beyond that, you start going, well, you're not re like we were talking before. You're not really using Jax and Stein as much as you should. You're not really using Ray hardly for most of the season in a way that makes sense, since he went and got the scientist guy and whatever. I just think I wonder if they really planned out. I think they planned out the what their stories were, but not really how these characters would fit into them. I'm hoping that that will improve as the season goes on, because we do have some really nice scenes with some of these characters. But I think it's a fundamental issue with the show. It's not, again, I like the show, but I'm very aware of issues like that as I watch it.
And that
I
was my
agree.
problem with these two episodes as well, because it seems like a lot of the team was not doing what they were there to be doing. Adam only suits up one time to fix something on the outside of a ship. Hawk Girl doesn't fly. Canary doesn't even really fight. Cold gets to shoot stuff, and Rory gets to do his fire thing. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's just making use of them better. I mean, I understand, a certain aspect of it is budget and effect, so you can't have Firestorm in 15, 20 minutes worth of the episode. You can't have her wings in 15, 20. But you can still find ways around that, and you can, and if you do it judiciously, they still can be used. I mean, it's not like when we watch The Flash, Barry is running around as a Flash for a full half hour in every episode. Of course he's not. That would be crazy expensive.
It's interesting that a comic correlation is I've seen writers talk about writing team books and how they wouldn't do it because they find team books are one of the hardest things to do because you have so many characters you're trying to juggle and write. And a lot of the time you can tell a really good writer by the ones who can write the team books and everyone fits into a place, everyone doing what they should be doing and making it all mesh together. And they just haven't found the way to do that. Like, you see teams are picked at random instead of, this is why I'm picking you. This is like a little bit like that. Like, you get in like heist movies, like why this person fits here in this certain thing. It's more just like, I'll take you four stay here. It's like, all right.
I want to counter that because they did do it at the beginning of the year, especially in the first couple episodes, when they had the big fight, arms auction. That worked well.
Yeah, and then it doesn't seem to be doing it as much since then.
They've tailed off since then. I hope they do it. You know, I want them to do it more.
The big fight where there's, you know, nuclear missiles and whatever and other forms of armaments all around, yet they're blasting fire blasts from like two different characters all around. Although the problem with the show is you have two different characters who have these fire wielding powers and whatever, but never seem to ever set anything on fire.
No
one's ever burned. Just like when he freezes the thing, people rarely ever seem to be frozen by him, which I'm gonna be dorky here, I don't care. That kind of annoys me. It's Captain Cold. Every time that stuff comes out of his gun, for the last 50 years of comic books, it's because he's freezing somebody or freezing something.
Even on The Flash, he was freezing things. There were characters, you saw them get frozen.
It bugs me. And I know it's an effect thing or cost thing. I don't care. Figure it out, guys, because it's annoying me. And if it's annoying me, that's what's important. Anyway. But going back to what you were saying about teams, I think that's actually a great point, because even if you're a comic book geek, or even if you're not, but you're familiar with how teams, like Vicky, I know you're not like big with, like, you haven't read a lot of like DC Comics, but or you've read more Marvel, I think, or whatever. But it doesn't matter. You know about teams like the Fantastic Four or the Avengers and stuff like that, and you see how when you put those teams together, there's a reason, and their powers complement each other, and there's why you have this one, and I don't feel that with this weird hodgepodge of characters, and I think that was when there was some head scratching when they first came up with the show. I was like, really, those characters? And it felt like they were just picking characters because, well, a lot of them had already appeared on other shows. I mean, you already had Captain Cold and Heatwave on The Flash. Oh, we can use them. We already had Sarah on the Arrow. Oh, we can use, and Adam. Oh, we can use them. But I kind of wish they had taken a bigger chance and came up with more quote-unquote original characters for the show, so that they would have meshed together. It would have made more sense. And maybe they did, and maybe you're right. Maybe a better writer. Maybe get one of those comic book writers. You know? I mean, it's too bad. The first person I thought of who, I don't know, how old he must be at this point in time. When I was a kid, I remember reading the original, not the original, the New Teen Titans, with the 1980 comic, you know, Marv Wolfman.
Yeah.
Great comic. You know, it was like, that was one of DC's few shining lights at that period in time, because Marvel was so great, you know, at that point. But you had all these different characters who all had very distinctly different abilities and different personalities, and they all interacted well with each other, and you could break them off into different splinter groups, and it really worked well. That's the kind of format I think they need for a show like this. And I don't think they've achieved it yet. So that's why I'm excited about the possibility that we were talking about earlier about cycling characters in and out, because maybe you might find the right combination. Because I think some of these people should stay, but some of them should go. Unfortunately, I think we may be stuck with Hawkgirl because of the whole Vandal Savage thing. I keep thinking the writers are like, can we come up with a way out of that? Is there any
it
way?
It does, and yeah.
I don't know a way out of it.
Well, speaking of team writers, oddly enough, there's a guy who's like connected to these shows in a way with Jeff Johns, who wrote a really good team book at the beginning of the 2000s in the JSA run he had, which he had a lot of characters, but he knew how to pair them up at times when he needed to make it work. There's a guy right there you could talk to.
Oh, he also knew how to write Hawkgirl.
Yes, he did. In fact, he wrote Hawkman. Hawkgirl they want to be.
Right. Unfortunately, you can write it as well as you want, but if the casting is not that great, you're still kind of screwed.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
Although, like I said, I don't know. Again, it might have been based on something she was wearing. I don't know, but I kind of didn't mind her in this episode, so I don't know. So we know that the next episode we're going to the late 50s. I believe I even heard a reference to Pleasantville when they were in the ad for it. So, Okay.
We'll see. Real quick, one little thing.
Go ahead.
Can I point out my favorite geeky moment of this tonight's episode? The reference to Kanjar Roe. That was a fun little.
Yep.
Little drop there.
For the kids out there, Kanjar Roe was an original kind of a classic Justice League of America villain back in the 60s. Kind of a weird bug-eyed space alien character, but it goes back a ways. So yeah, that was kind of a funny one. And plus, they kept using the phrase Space Ranger, and there was an old sci-fi comic back in the late 50s that might have been Space Ranger, if I recall, something like that. I'm a little foggy tonight, so I apologize. But, I think the Rory Snart stuff really helped elevate the episodes. This episode also had a lot of nods to things like Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek throughout it. You know, well, Battlestar more because of the casting, because the main, I think people probably recognize the main Time Pirate as one of the actors from Battlestar Galactica. And they certainly made all the Kirk and Picard references,
I thought that was funny with Ray pretending to be Kirk.
Yeah, he's no Kirk. And you know what?
Oh, yeah, I know. He's clearly, yeah.
Well, I'm also going to say, he's no Picard either.
Yeah.
He's like, you might be Crusher. I feel he's more of a Crusher than anything. You think about it, he's exuberant.
I was gonna say with the eagerness. Yeah, he's definitely a sweet crusher.
All right then. I feel like we've covered enough. Can we move on to the next subject for the evening?
We sure can.
All right. Well, tonight I really, really, really wanted to talk about Agent Carter.
You walk in a room. And nature takes its course, conquers me by force, and with no remorse. Baby, I assume that you always knew the recipe. It's simply me and you.
Now, we haven't had the chance to chat about Agent Carter that much on our podcast, usually based on issues of time, because especially the last few weeks, The Flash has really monopolized our time on the podcast more than anything else, and rightfully so. But I really wanted to take the opportunity to really talk about this show, this series, and I don't know if they're going to get a third season. The ratings were, quite frankly, not very good. Not that the first season had really fantastic ratings either, for that matter. The main character, actress, I should say, Hayley Atwell, who I adore, has signed for another ABC series, although she has made it clear that she would be able to do both series if they did renew Agent Carter. But I really felt it deserved a little bit of conversation, so I could really expound on it a little bit and talk about how great the show really is. I mean, it's a great series. And I look back on season one, and I thought season one was a good season. It reestablishes, for anyone who didn't remember the first Captain America movie, it reestablishes who Peggy Carter is. And, you know, she's in New York, and she's working for an organization which we know is going to be like the early version or forebearer to S.H.I.E.L.D., the SSR. And a lot of season one had to deal with the issues of being a woman and how they were treated in the professional world, or in this case in the world of spies, in the 40s, where she was really regarded as a glorified secretary by most of her peers, whereas a few people, and the viewers certainly know, yeah, she's pretty much more on the ball than any of them. That might have been one of the more, not annoying, it was maybe a little bothersome. I enjoyed it, but you every episode you wanted her to, like, just, you know, strangle someone. But it was understandable, because it's the times. But like I said, it was a really good season. Season two took it up a couple notches. It built on a good season. It gave us a great season. It gave us 10 episodes of period adventure, drama, and humor. It's a combination that we don't really get with any other show, especially with because of the period aspect. And, I mean, it's, for me, I personally think it's, number one, I think it might be the best, forget might, remove the word might from what I just said, it is. I feel it's the best property of the whole, quote-unquote, Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I know that may be something like, ooh, what did you just say? It's like, yeah, I don't just rank it above Daredevil. That's easy. I think it's 1,000 times better, a better series than Daredevil. And I can give you 1,000,000 reasons why. And no one will ever win that debate with me, no matter how they try. And if they do think they can, they're idiots. But I'm also going to say it's better than Jessica Jones. And we love Jessica Jones. And, you know, last year, that Jessica was like my number 11 show for the year. It came, just missed my top 10. But I think as an overall series, and there's so much more going on with Agent Carter. It's a much richer series. Jessica Jones is a more serious series, and we applaud how it dealt with some major, major issues, like we, you know, like the issue of, you know, well, of rape and abuse and things of that. And that ends a much darker show as a result. But on a show like Agent Carter, I mean, the writing is really sharp, especially for a quote-unquote network TV show. It's got so many great characters that are really made distinct from one another. They're all well-written. They all have a certain level of humor to them, yet they can also juggle a lot of serious storylines as well. I was amazed by some things that happened this past in these last few episodes, which took a turn that were much more emotionally affecting than I had ever imagined on this show, and it made me realize just how good the show is. It made me teary. It made me sad. It made me worry. That says something to me. It's just a really great show. The characters on it, I mean, obviously everything comes to your lead, and Hayley Atwell, I mean, putting aside the fact that I'm so fond of her because she's a very attractive woman, forget the looks. She's got a certain quality about her. I mean, for lack of a less dated way to put it, she's got the it factor. When she's on screen, she holds the attention of the viewer no matter what she looks like. She's just got that certain kind of presence. And that says something to me because some actors, they're good, but they don't quite have that presence on screen. I'll give you let's go to Daredevil, for example. I like Charlie Cox, and I think he's fine in the role as Matt Murdock, especially. But he doesn't command the screen the way I think Hayley Atwell can on Agent Carter, for example. Then you have all these other people who return from season one to season two. You know, Sousa, Jack Thompson, Jarvis. Let's go to Jarvis. Jarvis is one of the most delightful creations I've seen on a TV show in the last couple of years. We spoke about him in a recent podcast. I think it was, might have been Jason who mentioned it, I think, because we knew the actor from the second season of Broadchurch, where he, up until the very end, he's about as unlikable a scumbag as you'll ever come across on a TV show. And he's he's the polar opposite.
He's a fucking creep on Broadchurch.
Really, you had to go Dan on me? But he's so good on this show. And this second season, as much fun as he was in the first season, they gave him more to do and more to play with this season. And he took that character to a couple places we hadn't seen or hadn't expected with that character. And it almost ripped my heart out in one moment, in fact. But love the character. Love the fact that that's kind of the precursor to the AI Jarvis that Tony Stark will have, you know, decades later. I would love to see how that transition eventually happens. You know, if it was, I guess Howard Stark must have had something to do with it, I'm thinking. But as and as much fun as all the characters who were in season one are, who've returned for season two, they then broke the bank with all the great characters they added for season two. And that's really saying something. When you have a new season of any TV show and you add people, you know, shows often can fail at that. You often like, oh, this character doesn't really fit in, or we don't like this character, or we want to... Doesn't happen on this show. They can add, you know, everything from, you know, Jarvis's wife, who I don't believe we saw in season one, but we certainly got a lot of her in season two. I thought she was, again, I'm going to use the word again because I can't think of a better phrase for her. Delightful. Just, and you could understand why those two very different people would be together as a couple.
If I can just interject for a minute, I love the addition of Anna Jarvis this season. Like you said, she's delightful. She just her spirit, I think, is just, you know, amazing. And she's a strong woman, but not in the sense that Carter is.
Right.
You know, she went through all of this you know, stuff during the war, but she never lost, you know, this, I don't know, she just has this sense of joy, I feel. And it just seeing the relationship between her and Jarvis was refreshing. Just to see such a loving relationship and how close they are.
And
was lovely.
And wasn't it nice that they avoided some of the more obvious cliche things they could have done there, that they could have had her act somewhat jealous of Carter because of, you know, for any number, they could have tried that for any number of reasons, you know, whether it be just, you know, out and out jealousy, or the fact that she's taking her husband away from him all the time and putting him in danger. They didn't do any of that. I was so happy they avoided all of those eye rolling pitfalls that usually happen on shows like this.
And that, I think, was one of the many reasons that this show works so well.
Absolutely. And another thing, since we're talking about the ladies, because this show, wow, does it do a great service for female characters, and not just the good guys. Let's talk about the villains, or, you know, what we used to call the villainesses when I was a kid. I mean, in the first season, you had the Dottie Underwood character, who then returns for a few times in season two. She's so good.
I love Dottie.
I mean, she's a forebearer to Natasha Romanoff because of, you know, what she went through, I guess, is something similar to what the Black Widow goes through in her lifetime. Don't know, don't care, doesn't matter. But this character, as amusing a badass as I've seen on a TV show, and, you know, and lethal, but just, oh, great character. Really, it's like, oh, it's the perfect love to hate kind of character. And then you kind of like, but I kind of like her too. It's really weird. They make you change your mind about her from, you know, episode to episode when we see her. But season two, they hit the jackpot in evil with the character Whitney Frost, played by this actress, Wynne Everett. Wow. Kind of snuck up on me. Because when the season starts out, you know, you already know that, okay, there's something off with this woman. You know, she's definitely got some issues, so to speak. And then when she encounters the dark matter, she's really got some issues.
Especially at the end there.
Oh, well, yeah. But throughout the season, I love that it becomes more and more clear that despite the fact that you have, you know, this cabal of evil and these organizations, and which are all tend to be, you know, men in a boardroom or men around a table somewhere, who's really in charge? Who ends up being in charge? It's this woman. And it's interesting because she has, you know, on one hand, you could say, oh, she has a lust for power. And yeah, that's part of it. But there's also something, I can't call it noble, but you almost understand it with her, because there is the wonder of the scientific discovery, because we actually get a little bit of a backstory on her. And okay, now I'm going to razz Daredevil again. Unlike the backstory for Wilton Fisk that so many people made such a big deal about on Daredevil, like this was like the greatest thing ever committed to film, I never really bought it to a certain extent, like, oh, that's really the adequate explanation of why he is what he is today. Whereas when we see Whitney Frost's childhood and what kind of child she was and what she went through and how this was a systematic series of events in her life, you know, because we see her as a child, we see her, you know, as a teenager, we see her when she's first arriving in Hollywood, and you realize we know how she got to be the person she is today and why she is. And they do that in really neatly and really just little bits of exposition that are entertaining in one episode. I really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed that episode where we got the backstory for Whitney Frost, because then they'd also, counterbalance that with showing how Carter got into the SSR.
Yep.
Even more lost than we had thought she'd suffered.
Right. Yeah. And wasn't that interesting that they chose to do it that way, that they actually did a double origin story in a sense, that we got to see both sides of the coin. And these two very different characters and how they came to where they are today. And you're right. I did not expect that, with that she had experienced that other loss, because we all know about the loss of Steve Rogers. We didn't know, oh, she's been down that road before. I haven't watched the first Captain America movie, the first Avenger, in a long time. So I don't know if there's any reference or hint of that when we first meet her character in that movie. I'm almost curious.
Yeah, no, there's nothing.
Okay. So maybe they came up with it for here. I don't know. I'm not sure.
That was easily the best episode that I saw so far. It was the one you were just talking about.
Oh, yeah. It was just... It just, the show just works so well. Oh, speaking of people that they added this season, two others I just want to throw in here before we move on. They went and got Kurtwood Smith, who, you know, outside of that 70s show, is instant, oh, we're going to hate him, because that's basically what he's played for the last 30 or 40 years of his career. And he's this slimy guy in charge. I think he's initially from the FBI, but he's taking over the SSR or whatever. He's kind of an evil little twisted son of a bitch. But more fun than that, they added Ken Marino to the cast. Ken Marino, people might know that name. He was one of the original members of the comedy troupe The State. So obviously he's in the Wet Hot American Summer movie and the series that was on Netflix recently. And I first encountered him, because I saw it before I saw Wet Hot American Summer, as that total schmuck on Veronica Mars, like the worst PI ever especially compared to Keith Mars. He plays, let's say eventually a lovesick gangster on this show. And again, balancing humor, because there's a lot of funny stuff with him, but then he also has some rather savage, violent moments too. It's like something out of a Scorsese movie, practically. Really, the fact that they could have all these different types of characters, and it's a period thing, so you always have to be concerned about that as far as how people speak, what's the vernacular, how things should look. You don't want to end up with any anachronisms that will really stick out. I feel like the show does so much, and it pulls it off really, really well. And one more thing I want to say, and I think, Vicky, I think you will appreciate this especially, because it goes back to something we were talking about during Legends thing. You know what else this show does really well that a lot of other shows could learn from? They figured out how to handle a love triangle. And do it in a way where we actually cared, that it wasn't like, oh, please, let's move on to the next scene already, that it actually was, you know, given, ladled out bit by bit, and when it finally, until we realized, oh my God, there's a triangle situation here, and everyone's kind of aware of it. I really liked the way that was handled. It wasn't a CW-style kind of thing. I didn't feel like a wannabe tween watching what was unfolding here. And it never took it was always part of the story, but it never took over the story either.
Because exactly.
It wasn't the focus, but I liked that they still had it there because, you know, it made sense. Because the Sousa character, we knew that he felt a certain way about her, and that was really the reason why he moved to L.A. to begin with. So it would have been disingenuous not to address that. So I really...
Yeah, there was that one conversation with her and Jarvis in the car, and he's saying, you know, you don't see your allure, you don't see the effect that you have in men, you're a really, a lovely woman, and that's kind of just something she doesn't see. She's just always all business, and then she's like, oh, wait, yeah, I do have these apparently two guys who are really into me, so.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that more, especially by the time we got to the end of the season, probably one of my favorite occasional duos of any show I'm watching is the Jarvis and Peggy Carter combo. I mean, those two are just fantastic together. You know, I mean, that the fact that they're both expatriates, from the UK, and yet still very different. But and especially as the storyline, and I don't want to spoil things for people who haven't seen, who might want to find season two. Again, this show is very hard to find. Season one was hard for people to find. I'm sure season two is going to be hard for people to find eventually. But if you are able to find the show, please watch it. I'm sure it's binge worthy. I will give you one little spoiler because why the hell not? As great a show as it is with all the period stuff and the adventure and the humor and everything else, I said, you know what? We even get a nice song and dance number.
Yeah, I love that.
It was a fantastic song. I mean, it could have been something right out of a Joss Whedon show. It was just delightful, and you'll know which episode it's in because the title of the episode is A Little Song and Dance. So spoiler, that episode will have a song and dance number.
And then, like, also I just wanted to, like, add one thing. As great as the Jarvis and, you know, Peggy relationship is, I think it was kind of appropriate for them to have, you know, that big fight, big disagreement that they did because it was over something pretty important. So, and I thought it was done really well. So.
Oh, again, you're absolutely right. A show that could have coasted and remained on a fairly light level, which is kind of what they did in season one. And that's not me. I'm not knocking season one at all. I enjoyed it very much. But like I said, I thought they took it up a couple notches this season. So you could have a scene like that. That was kind of gut-wrenching, especially when certain things are revealed during that conversation that you're talking about. And I was going, oh, that's really good stuff. This is really good. I can't recommend the show enough. I almost want to say that when I look back at these 10 episodes for season two, on top of what had been done in season one, one can make a legitimate argument. It could be the best comic book inspired or based upon whatever property, at least on TV, if not film as well. I think that case could be made because here's why. I can't, especially after this season, I really can't think of any flaws. I can't think of anything I would say, oh, I don't like that, or I would nitpick about that, or whatever. There was nothing I could find issue with. While other shows that, even shows that we like or even say we love, we do have a lot of issues with from time to time. So this, it's a nice little perfect confection here. I really hope that somehow it gets a third season, whether it be on ABC or, hell, you know what, Netflix, you're cornering the market on other Marvel TV shows. Why not take this one too? It could be a nice counterbalance to the grim, dark nature of both Daredevil and Jessica Jones and their upcoming shows as well. Why not have one that's a little bit more family-friendly? You know, why the heck not? It'll be great. Plus, I won't spoil it, I will be a little frustrated if we don't get any more Agent Carter, considering, let's just say, not everything was resolved by the end of the series. I won't say anything else. But that would be a little frustrating. I'm like, but.
And I just want to say, as much grief as Marvel gets for not even having a female-led movie in the near future, which is totally warranted, this show almost makes it up, makes up for a little bit, and it shows that a woman can lead a superhero show, and it can be freaking amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, look at it. They have, right now, they have four current shows on right now, right? We got Daredevil and Jessica Jones, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. We know there's others coming on Netflix, you know, like Luke Cage, I guess Iron Fist, and eventually Defenders. And I think they're now moving forward yet again with a possible spinoff from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which might be dealing with the Mockingbird character and the other dude. I think they're gonna do that after all. They were, yeah. Then they weren't, now they were, whatever. Those don't count because they're not on the air yet, so who cares? The point I wanted to make was, you got four right now. And you know what? For me, the two best ones are the two female-led ones. So, you know, kudos to Marvel, or at least their Marvel TV productions, because Jessica Jones and Agent Carter, I think, are far better and stronger than their network mates, whether it be Daredevil on Netflix or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC. And it's really nice to see because, you know, roles aren't always great, especially in this genre, for women. They tend to get sidelined more often than they should. It's nice to see that they are definitely the ones that are in charge, and it's done in a very believable and even to a certain extent realistic fashion. I really enjoy those shows.
And I think the fact that you know, they make the Dottie Underwood character such a great character. I mean, this is me kind of just bring, but it. I think that character would be a good argument for the fact there should be a Black Widow movie. Just gonna say that.
I think it goes without saying there should be a Black Widow movie. Even if, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you can have a Black Widow movie, and you can still throw a couple other people in there, because that's what they're doing with all these movies now anyway.
Heck, I would be fine if they just made it like a Black Widow Hawkeye movie. That would be fine.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it would. It would be. Call it Budapest.
As long as he's not wearing purple, I'm okay with it. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm still here. I heard that.
I know. I that was me. My testing to see if Cade was back yet because I can't see my computer screen.
I don't think I ever weighed in on this, but I actually like the Hawkeye costume too.
Well, of course.
Thank you, Jason.
Which gives
Thank
me, you. Which only validates my point that.
Damn
much
it!
More.
It does.
You don't want Mr. Wrong on your side. Mr. Wrong, except when it comes to Zoom. Oh, my goodness. Well, okay. Since we were chatting about ladies on TV, I think we have time to actually talk about a certain super lady or a super girl. And, of course, I'm talking about the latest episode of Supergirl. Have we skipped a couple? I can't remember. I know we talked about Bizarro. We talked about the Bizarro one.
We talked about last week's, yeah.
We did? Okay.
Yeah.
I did a brief little recap, actually. I did it right.
Oh, you must have, since I don't remember it. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
I apologize. I actually have the beginnings of a massive headache right now, so I'm trying to ignore it while we talk. So the latest episode was titled Solitude, and we all knew what that meant once you use the word solitude, and it's something dealing with the super mythos. I did find the synopsis for this episode as well. Solitude. Kara travels to Superman's Fortress of Solitude in hopes of learning how to defeat Indigo, a dangerous being who can transport via the internet and who has a connection to Kara's past. Also, James' relationship with Lucy reaches a crossroads. Yeah, who cares? Okay, right off the bat, I just want to say, as someone who actually sat through and watched all 10 seasons of Smallville, it was kind of fun to see the actress who I only know as being Supergirl from Smallville getting a chance to play a bad guy on the new Supergirl show. Laura Vandervoort, I think her name
Vandervoort.
Is. Vandervoort, that's a name. Clearly was having fun in this part. which was difficult because sometimes it's not a lot of fun when you got to wear a lot of makeup. Cade, let me ask you something before I move any further with this. I know they make a reference to her being Brainiac 8.
You know, so, correct.
But she's known as Indigo as well from the comic books. Is that correct?
Right. Quick synopsis, her origin. She shows up as a character called Indigo. She worked with superheroes until it was revealed she was actually Brainiac 8, then she became a villain.
Okay. One more question. How her appearance, how she looked in the comics, is what we saw in the TV show a rough approximation of that, or did she look considerably different in the comic books?
She looked different. She had the purple skin of the Kaluans, I think is how you say it. I can't really. She has the purple skin, but her hair was just regular green hair. It wasn't like the braids and stuff she had, and she didn't have all the weird suit.
Okay. I'm asking because I remember I was on Instagram earlier, either today, I think it might have been, and I saw an interesting meme that had all these Marvel characters and DC characters, you know, from the TV and movies, and how it looks like DC keeps doing characters that look like Marvel characters. So you have Diggle with the helmet next to Magneto, you have Adam with his outfit next to Iron Man, and you had Indigo from Supergirl next to Mystique from the X-Men movie.
Yeah, she definitely did not look like that in the comics. There was definitely, the one I'm watching, I'm like, oh, they made their own Mystique. Just the movements and everything they did, you could very much see the influence.
All right, I was wondering if that was the case. I was already defending, like, no, this character always looked that way, but I don't actually know, and I didn't do the research, so I figured I'll use you as my research. So.
No, she didn't really look like that in the comics.
Oh, well. Anyway, so this episode, I enjoyed it. I really liked the Indigo character as a villain. I'm happy by the time we got to the end of it. It means we could still see more of her. So that was kind of enjoyable as well. And I like that they resolved the issue of the killing of Astra as far as the whole Hank and... what's her sister's name? I'm drawing a blank.
Alex.
Because if they had dragged that on for another few episodes, it really would have gotten annoying after a while. I really wouldn't be like, enough already. So, but the show, I have to say, I'm really enjoying it more now than I ever have in its early goings. I'm not even getting that bothered by the James and Lucy stuff, because I think we've kind of resolved that as well. So, you know, I'm enjoying it. How are you feeling about it, Kate?
I completely agree. Many of the small little things that worried me would be problems continuing in the early episodes. They've gotten away. Even the smallest story that didn't, I would have said prior, I don't care about the James and Lucy stuff. Even in this one, I felt it had some impact. It had some point. It did build on things. Before, I was like, I don't really care about them. But they made it work here, because putting Lucy as not just some random character who shows up, having her be there more, it is building to something there, and it means something. So we're getting villains. We're getting good villains. Not just villains of the week, introducing Indigo, Brainiac 8, you know that's a setup for her to come back and be a problem again. And as you said, the biggest worry I had recently from the show was that the Alex killing Astra thing would drag on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And they didn't. They said, let's solve it. Let's bring these two together. Because one of the things that became the strength of the show was Hank and the two daughters. The two girls, and the way they worked as a team, the way they had bonded, it just formed this little union between themselves, and they destroyed it, and I think they realized that was a bad move, because it's better when they're working together. When they're eye-to-eye, they're trying to help each other. It just makes a better show when that core three group right there is on the same page.
Yeah, the stuff with Hank and Alex and Kara, I mean, the stronger that relationship has grown with those three, it's made what I thought was a weakness on the show into bordering on a strength of the show. I mean, I still have issues with how they've presented the DEO there. I wish I don't know if it's maybe I just want a different set. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I mean, it's still not quite there. You know what? It reminds me a little bit of, as has been mentioned in other podcasts, even though one of our fellow podcasters who only half listens seem to forget this. I'm an avid Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. And there was that one season, I think it was season 4, which had the whole, secret government organization conspiracy thing going on and whatever. While I liked that season, there were always aspects of it that seemed just a little bit chintzier than they should be. But the strength of the acting and the writing was so good, I didn't care. This show is getting there. It's not, obviously it's never going to be Buffy level, but it's making me look forward to those moments between them because the characters are being written better. I mean, the Alex character I think is so much better now.
Oh, like a massively improved character.
Yeah.
Like she's not like she started off really flat, but they've like given her something. She has something and you really can see it's not the actress who's the problem. It was how they were writing her character so flat that the minute they give her character more, she's making the character something. You're interested in seeing Alex. Her and the Maxwell Lord thing was actually interesting just watching those two. You didn't have Supergirl in it at all at some point, but you were interested in it.
Vicky?
Yeah, no, I'll agree. Alex has gotten so much better. I'm so glad that they didn't drag out the thing with Alex killing Astra, but Hank saying it was him. And I thought that it was resolved really well. Alex basically saying that she was too afraid to say it because she didn't want to lose Kara. Mm-hmm. But I am annoyed with the whole Lucy James relationship. That just made me roll my eyes so much. But hopefully it's over now. So, I mean, I doubt it, but
yeah. No, I think parts of it bother me because I've ragged on it before. But I actually thought there were some good moments with this past episode, so it didn't bother me as much as it had in the past. I liked her catching, basically, because I like her catching on to what's going on. Liked her figure when Kara goes to her, and basically. What she ends up doing has the opposite effect of what she had planned. And the whole thing about the story about his father, and I was like, oh, wow.
So,
obviously I'm not a fan of the soapy nature of it. I mean, although I'm an old soap opera fan, so I don't mind something being soapy if it's done well. And I didn't think this was being done particularly well for the most part. I like these couple scenes. Does that make up for all the other stuff? The one sort of problem on the show is that they set up this awkward situation with her and with James Olsen, and Wynn is still there, and we know he's pining for her, and it's just, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know, and it kind of just makes me kind of cringe a little bit at times. So like I said, some shows can do a triangle really well. Some shows... maybe not so much.
I think my biggest problem with it was James basically saying he has to be completely honest with Lucy so that he has to tell her, you know, that Kara is Supergirl.
That's ridiculous.
That was the biggest thing about it that annoyed me. I'm like, really? Just no.
If that's the case, shouldn't he tell her who Superman is?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
if that's how honest you have to be, the guy who you know she always brings up, you should tell her that one. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's kind of a nonsense storyline, and again, I think it's injecting something into the show that maybe they feel they need to have, and I don't think it needs to be there right now, or at least again, come up with something if you're determined to have her have relationship issues, and that, you know, that's fine. She's a 20 something, she's working, you know, whatever, it's fine, but do it better. And don't do it in a silly way. You know, you didn't have to have all. I mean, I like the fact that you went and like, oh, we're gonna have James Olsen on the show. That's kind of fun. You know, whatever. Although, again, I keep wondering. You keep having the issue of why doesn't Superman get a call from time to time? There are some issues, things that have happened. They're like, hey, doesn't he still have the watch or can he call? But it looks like the whole city is going to be destroyed or something if she's not available. But I kind of wish they had gone about it in a slightly less goofy way, or maybe I just wish they had given Wynn more of a shot. I don't know, because I really like Wynn's character, and I wish they gave him more to do.
Though apparently now he's into Siobhan. That was completely random and out of nowhere.
Well, we know that's not going to go very well fairly soon.
Yeah.
So it's like Cisco hooking up with, she's Hawkgirl. You know that ain't going to last too long with Cisco. So this one, you know she's somebody else. That's not, and it's really not going to work out for you. Oh, maybe. I still think he may end up being Toyman Jr. one time. We'll see.
Well, that's what Kat referred to him as, so.
Yes. Today. Oh, but again, another, and we've said it before, I still am amazed that I enjoy Kat on the show now. I never thought I'd say that.
Of the things that the show, as you're saying, never did I go, even in my head, I'm like, they're going to make it better. I'll just be able to ignore her with how good it was going to be. To realize that I don't ignore her. I actually like when she's on screen. She does actually entertain me more than some of the other parts. I'm like, well done on actually not just Alex's character, but taking her character and moving her into a place that is far better, that is interesting, and actually makes the show better.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to them utilizing her more on the show in future storylines. I mean, I feel like she could definitely have some face-offs with like Maxwell Lord, since they're both very dominating characters, rich, you know, powerful, have had their encounters in the past. I think those two in scenes together could be a lot of fun as well. So yeah, I don't know if they have new episodes throughout the month. We know they're gonna have a big one towards the end of the month, because that might. Supergirl might get top billing in that podcast. Let's put it that way. There's a very good chance she'll be the lead, you know, in late March. And I think we all know why. And if you listen to this podcast and you don't know why, then you're like, you know who, and you're only half listening. So... yeah. We don't have random dogs barking or cats meowing. We just have roommates doing whatever they're doing on the podcast. Okay, I think we're getting near the end here. One thing I wanted to mention, just to be goofy, the anticipation is definitely starting to build for me for the upcoming Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice film, which is going to be hitting theaters in a couple weeks. I mean, I've read some bad things and I've read some good things. You know, I finally saw like the first actual semi-review from someone who's seen it, and it sounded pretty good from what this guy said. I'm hearing all these things about people who are going to show up in it. I'm trying to ignore it. Because at this point, I'm only a couple weeks away from seeing it. I don't want to be spoiled any more than I already am on this film. And I actually have tickets for 6 o'clock the day before it opens, as well as 9 o'clock in the morning the day after it opens. So I'm already committed to seeing it twice on the biggest IMAX screen in New York City. So I'm hoping it's at least good. But hell, I went and saw Dark Knight Rises 4 times in that theater. And I didn't even like that movie very much. I still saw it 4 times. So I'm sure I'll see this a few more times. Are you guys kind of excited about it as well, or what at this point?
No, it's actually gotten me to the point where I want to see it. I do want to. even with my reservations, I feel they're going to cram too much into it, I still want to go see it.
Right.
I liked Man of Steel, and while I would have liked a Man of Steel 2 before this, I'm going to go, because there's part of me that feels there's something interesting that's going to happen in the movie. They're teasing a lot of things, and hopefully they follow through with them.
Right.
I'm cautiously optimistic about the movie. I will be seeing it, too. I'm going to be looking for some way for them to tie into the TV shows, believe it or not.
You're all about the multiverse.
Yeah, I am.
No, I know. There is a chance that could be referenced. I don't know if it'll be in this film or not. I do feel it will show up in a film eventually. I don't know if it'll be this one or maybe the first Justice League film, but I do think that'll happen eventually. But I have no idea. I mean, I have no insight beyond what you're saying. How about you, Vicky? Are you, it's Wonder Woman. Come on.
That is mostly the reason would want to see this. I'm also cautiously enthusiastic. I'm going to be submitting for another movie theater cosplay event for this movie, so I might get to see it for free. Oh,
it'll be like your Fantastic Four.
Hopefully better.
I know how Cade and I felt. Did you guys like Man of Steel, Jason and Vicky? I have no idea, actually. I don't remember what your opinions were of that movie.
I enjoyed parts of it.
Okay, that's fair.
I liked it. I thought it was a pretty movie to look at. I just had a problem with all the destruction at the end.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Putting aside that happens in every movie. From what I've heard is, if you like Man of Steel, you're going to like this movie. And if you like Man of Steel, but you had issues with things that happened at the end, you should still like this movie because it addresses those things in this movie. Which I think we all know at this point from watching the trailers anyway. So that's not exactly a spoiler of any kind. But there will be people who are not going to like it because they're still staying in that somewhat grim or somewhat darker way of going about it. It's not bright and colorful. It's not the Flash TV show. Or even the Avengers movie, for that matter. But I know that going into it, so that doesn't bother me. Neither were the Chris Nolan movies, and I loved at least 2/3 of those. So I'm excited for it. I'm hopeful. I like the phrase cautiously optimistic. I'll go along with that. I just don't understand people who have to be negative from the get-go before the movie has even been released. I've never understood that. Why someone would need to be that way when they don't have really a good enough reason for it. I understand if everything you've seen is just crap, but I don't think that's what the case is here. But maybe people are snarkier than I expect people to be. I don't know. Or maybe I'm not as jaded as I thought I was. I don't know.
Another movie that's got that problem is the new Ghostbusters coming out with the new trailer that came out today. I wasn't too thrilled about it before, but once I saw the trailer, I was like, I might actually go see this now.
Yeah, I like the trailer. I don't understand. Again, there are people who are knocking that trailer, and like, the people who are knocking that trailer are the people who were already dead set against this movie to begin with. And
right,
it wouldn't have mattered if Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson, all of them were all together on screen for the whole trailer or something like that. They still would have an issue with it.
There's going to be a real star coming out of this movie, and it's not Wig or McCarthy. It's going to be McKinnon.
Yeah,
well, who looks like the standout of this movie.
Well, that's the way they feature. Well, I think Leslie Jones is actually going to steal a lot of scenes in the movie because that's just her way. I'm looking forward. I think she'll have a much more significant part in this movie than say Ernie Hudson did in the original Ghostbusters movie. Although he does have a couple great lines. Now, and I say this as someone, I was the perfect age for when Ghostbusters came out. I saw that, I was 14 years old. 14-year-old kid, when Ghostbusters come out, that's a movie you see every week for the entire summer. You know? I had several Ghostbuster t-shirts. I loved the hell out of that movie. Bill Murray could do no wrong in my eyes when I was a kid in the 80s. You know, I was like, it's like a kid. Was it Freaks and Geeks? One of them is, I think, is a big Bill Murray fan, if I recall. I was like that kid. And I don't want to spend too much too long on this, but I'll say on one hand, I understand that people don't want to see something that they cherish, a movie that they're, you know, they're sentimental about, they're nostalgic about, that they love. They don't want to see it remade. I could think of plenty of movies, if you told me they were going to remake it, I would be angry. I would be livid about it. I just don't apply that to Ghostbusters because, maybe because of their own involvement in this, and you know, and giving it their blessing with Aykroyd especially, and Ivan Reitman being all cool with it, whatever. And it, to me, it looks like, okay, it's just, it's not going to take away from the original movie. It's just, it's a new generation. And hey, it's kind of cool that they're doing it as a female version. I didn't understand why there was a backlash about that. I found that offensive, quite frankly.
Yeah, here's my thing, is the people say it's going to destroy Ghostbusters. They did that with Ghostbusters 2 years later or so. They already did a movie that ruined your supposed movie so much. Because Ghostbusters 2 is not good. If you loved one, how you can watch that one and go, oh, that lived up to it? It didn't. It was like, it felt so phoned in compared to what Ghostbusters was that you shouldn't trash this movie thinking this is going to ruin Ghostbusters, because Ghostbusters 2 should feel that same way to you.
I agree with you. I did not like Ghostbusters 2 very much. I mean, it's got a couple moments in it. There's certainly a couple scenes I like in it. But I'll take it back to 1989. June 23rd, 1989, I go and see Batman. And you have to remember, again, I'm a kid, 19, it's Jack Nicholson, it's the Joker, oh my God. Never mind what, I don't care how flawed the movie might have been, I was like, oh my God. The next Friday, Ghostbusters 2 is released. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to go see Ghostbusters 2. And I sat in that theater, total opposite reaction. I'm like, wait, what? The Statue of Liberty, what? I was floored by how bad it was. I really hated Ghostbusters 2 when I saw it in the theater. I actually like it more now than I did when I saw it the first time, but it's still, it's not good. I agree. It's not good.
Mm-hmm. You have to enjoy the video game. The video game came out like the unofficial Ghostbusters 3. That was actually quite good. I liked it. It was nice hearing all the actors back in those roles. But no, we're definitely straying far afield here.
Yeah, I know. I know. We're doing so well on time, and now we're adding to it. Talking about. So, wait, who's... Oh, you, Ghostbusters. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, Jason.
I love it. You just sounded like the mayor. The Ghostbusters.
Oh, look at that. A Jewish New Yorker comment. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. All right, on that awkward Trump-like moment, let's move on to wrapping things up here. If you enjoyed at least most of this podcast, you probably enjoy joining our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can also find us on iTunes. Simply search for us. Again, Serious TV Drama or Serious TV Drama Podcast. We'll pop up. You can subscribe to our feed. And better still, you can rate and review us there. As I've said countless times before, every rating and review bumps us up in people's searches when they're looking for specific podcasts about TV shows. We're doing better in the rankings for certain shows, which pleases me greatly, but we can do better. For some reason, we don't pop up, we almost never pop up for The Flash, though. That kind of pisses me off. So if there are people listening to this podcast and they're listening to it for The Flash, could you people please rate and review us? Because I'd like to at least show up in the top 100 Flash podcasts. I mean, we're showing up for Arrow and Better Call Saul and all the other things, but The Flash, it's very inconsistent. Every once in a while we're there, and then we're not. And it aggravates me. Maybe it's because the word Flash is very generic, so you get like 800 other things that have nothing to do with The Flash, too, when you're searching. Anyway, finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. Again, that's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I send out links to our podcast as well as tweet about things. You know, I sent out about 15 tweets about the Oscars, and maybe two of them were actually funny this past weekend. And that's about it. Next week, I'm 99% sure I will be doing the Better Call Saul podcast. I am equally sure I'll be doing that without Dan. I do have someone lined up to take his place. I believe they will not be sniffling throughout the whole podcast, so that would be nice. And you know, I make fun of Dan because he seems to have sinus problems and be sick a lot lately. We'll be doing that. I don't know the next time that the bunch of us will get together because we do have a bit of a respite for our shows. So we may be taking a break for a couple weeks. I think that's what's going to happen. Time will tell. I don't know. I might change, but maybe we'll change our mind. But I think that's what's going to happen. You guys have anything else to say before I say goodnight?
Nope.
All right.
Go see Deadpool if you haven't seen it yet.
I still have not seen it. I still have not seen it. So I don't know if I'm going to see it at this point. I want to, but I can't find the time. Maybe next week. Anyway, with all that said, I will start the round of saying goodnight by saying goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
Goodnight.
Everybody said goodnight.
The monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of wizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat. Beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The Flash,
the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.
The Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash, crash, smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fastest. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the unbeatable Flash.
No one knows Barry Allen is his real name. The police, justice is his aim. Wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it. When danger threatens, he'll switch in a minute. The Flash,
the Flash,
meet the mighty